Welcome to our intermission interview, and I'm pleased to announce that in person is Maestro Louis Scaglione. Welcome, Louis.
Thank you, Kevin.
We haven't sat face-to-face since last fall.
That's correct. We have not. The last set of interviews we did back in the spring, we were remotely in our own respective households. And that was a journey for me because setting up this little mini recording studio that I've had to set up just even to do teaching virtually. But it was through your guidance and our wonderful Joe Patty here at the station, we were able to get me set up. And it was an interesting experience because we both had to you would ask questions and record into your device. I would answer the questions and record into my device, and then we had to send all of that in. And through the magic that Mr. Patty does here at the station, he was able to put it all together, and we did our interviews. But it was really an interesting exercise and experiment for me, not doing this too much. So anyway, but we did it. We did it.
And now you have another skill, another notch on your gun belt.
You know, kicking and screaming, too, with all this new technology I've had to learn since the lockdown, just in order to continue to teach at the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra, now PYO Music Institute. But we had to make that transition very quickly when we shut down back in March. And I think we explained that a little bit of that back in April. But for our listening audiences, it's been an odyssey, to say the least, and one that's had many twists and turns. Everything, as new information comes to the fore, we have to make decisions. And our goal is to get our students back into in-person rehearsals and back into the classroom as soon as possible, as soon as we can safely do it. But we have to navigate so much as an independent institution, especially in between all of the schools that our students represent. So we represent over 90 different schools this year, and you can imagine all of those schools have different policies, different protocols for in-person, for virtual learning, for hybrid learning. And our task has been, as a community music provider, is to navigate those waters in order to come up with the best plan to bring as many people back together. We're in a virtual mode right now. We made that decision back in August to implement a 14-week virtual session, which began in mid-September when we typically begin our new season, going until the holidays in December. And then we'll take our normal break, our normal recess, and then I hope to reconvene in January with some level of in-person learning. We were even exploring trying to do something like that or a hybrid model now, but it's looking more and more likely that it's going to be January. But we're still working. We work on it almost every day, and our Board of Trustees is very committed. We have a very good committee on this of four noted physicians. And one who's actually in public health and in virology and viruses and vaccines at an international level. So we have her good counsel, and so we're working towards the goal of getting back together. What I've come to know about our students is that they're extraordinarily resilient. They have learned to be flexible. They have learned to be accommodating, as difficult as it is for many of them to be in the purely virtual space and not interacting with their friends and with their colleagues and with their peers, and learning and growing together in that social space. But they are sticking with it, and we have had excellent enrollment this year. I thought enrollment was going to drop precipitously, and we're only off a few percentage points over last year, so that was a very good and healthy sign. We still have room for certain instruments in the orchestra, low brass and tuba and French horn, Could use a few more double reeds, oboe and bassoon, and contrabasses. Otherwise, the orchestras and the ensembles are really well populated this year and enrolled. So, but we still have room, and we still will accept any auditions that students would like to submit. At this juncture, I have three concerts planned out this season. We've already started diving into one. We're having our sectional master classes with the Philadelphia Orchestra members, which the first one will be has already occurred, we will continue to do our regular programmatic activities. It's just it's all virtual at this point. So the classes are varied. The approach to teaching online is very, for me, very difficult. I know many of my colleagues kind of have embraced that world much before this all happened in March. But for those of us that were thrusted into it, you know, unceremoniously, and probably with the level of kicking and screaming, it's taken me a good 6 months to really embrace the technology, find out what works and what doesn't work. And while we can attend to extra musical thought that goes into preparing a piece, like the history of the composer, the history of the piece, the structure of the piece, the theory behind the piece, et cetera, that stuff you can focus in on. But you also have to balance that with that these students are in front of a computer screen all week long doing their academic work. And the one thing about working remotely and working from your home is that you never escape it, really. So having to do all of this in this context, it's about 10 times as much work to do, to thoughtfully think through each week and come up with a schedule that's cohesive and coherent and is forward-thinking and cumulative in the learning process as well. So it's been a journey, Kevin. It's been a great journey for me, particularly, and certainly for my students. But I'm very proud of all of them because they have such fortitude, intestinal fortitude, to keep this moving forward. And I am very proud of my colleagues, not only within the PYO Music Institute, but across the board in the community music education space, and all teachers, really, who have just had to manage this process in order to continue the educational process, which is so critical to the development of our young people. They're tomorrow's leaders. And if we don't educate them today and don't give them as much resource and do everything we can possibly give them, bend over as far back as we can for them, we're going to lose a lot of precious time, which I'm a little fearful some has already been lost.
Well, we didn't talk about the concert.
No.
Because I think this is more important to understand what is now happening in the musical world, not only for students, but for example, the New York Philharmonic, which has canceled its entire next season.
Correct.
So this is a big deal.
Yes.
As far as the music world goes.
Well, it is. And it's important to keep it going.
Well, let's briefly say that the next piece on the program after this intermission interview is the Symphony No. 4 of Tchaikovsky. Can you just give me a quick...
Sure. Well, I remember this program because it's from, this program is Sunday, November 19th, 2017, is our 17-18 season. And this season was one that had no solo. I featured no soloists in this season, but rather to showcase the talents of the orchestra. And this was the first program of that season from 2017-18 season. And with Lemaire, you had all of the beautiful solos in that very complex piece, which I thought they did well. And for the first program out the gate in any one season, this particular program was pretty hefty. In hindsight, this probably should have been a second or even a final program of the season, but I chose it as the first. And the Tchaikovsky Fourth Symphony is a tour de force. In fact, you know, the first movement is almost half the symphony. And to pace out the energy throughout that movement, as you'll hear, really takes a lot of command, takes a lot of discipline, So that, you know, you have this big brass playing. It's very athletic playing in this first movement. And throughout the whole symphony, but particularly in this movement, it's very emotionally charged. You know, all of Tchaikovsky's music, it was just imbued with so much personality and personal angst and melodrama that he had gone through his whole life. And this symphony, the Fate Symphony, as it's often nicknamed and called because of that, the big horn call at the very beginning, as we'll hear, is this fate knocking. But yet it finishes in such a joyful way to really celebrate that the spirit, the human spirit, will endure and will survive and will in many ways thrive. So this symphony is actually a particularly relative. The reason why I chose to rebroadcast this is because, particularly of this symphony, is because it really is a, it reminds us that fate is there, and but we, it, to many, to a greater degree, have control over our own fate based on our decision making, and that we should take the opportunity to really celebrate what we do have at the moment that we have it. And so, as we are celebrating today, but with this interview, with being in person, is really a moment, a poignant moment for me, because it's the first time I've been able to see my good friend in a long while, and it's just a delight and pleasure to be here. So this symphony, I think, is a little, perhaps a little microcosm of what the general overall feeling is at this point in all of our lives. And they performed it, I thought, quite well. I was very pleased with this first performance from that season, and I hope our listening audience enjoys it this afternoon.
Well, Maestro Scaglione, we look forward to the performance of the Symphony No. 4, and thank you very much for coming in and being a live guest here on WRTI.
And thank you, Kevin, and thank you to WRTI and our entire listening audience. Its support of this station is as vital and crucial as it has sustained many of us through these many months of isolation. So you and your colleagues are to be just congratulated for the fine work that you do here in support not only of classical music, of music education, but really of our community through what you do here at WRTI. So thank you very much.